Members, we will call the meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. Do we have enough for a quorum? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think we have just enough for a quorum, unless I'm miscounting. Do we have a copy of the minutes, Andy? Representative Anderson, did you get a chance to peruse those minutes that are in your hand? Yes. And if so, would you move those?
I'd like to move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Anderson moves the minutes from the last meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Motion prevails. The minutes from our last meeting are adopted. With that, we will jump right into the agenda. Welcome to our committee, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move House File 859 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register, please. And then there is an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Is that technical, the General Register thing?
The amendment is the A2 amendment. It is an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author would like to move forward with it. It's also my understanding from Ms. Prokosh, who's sitting to my left, that who's been working this bill, for a couple of months, I think, that she has met with all of the various parties, we are striking or seeking peace in the valley. I know we've made considerable progress. It's my understanding that we won't have testimony in opposition, but one never knows. It's also my understanding that this bill has already passed the Senate in a fashion, passed the Senate's Commerce Committee and is on the floor in the Senate with not quite as good of a language as we are now proposing here. We've made an additional change that has, with the goal being to further try to alleviate the concerns that some folks on the other side of the issue originally had. Mr. Chair, with that, I will turn it over to Ms. Prokosh. She can walk you through the impetus for the bill, and then we'd be happy to take any questions or concerns from members.
Should we go ahead and vote on the amendment right now, and then we can have Ms. Prokosh testify, should she so choose?
That'd be ideal, Mr. Chair.
I think she might. With that, is there, members, any questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, we will vote on approval of the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Ms. Prokosh, welcome to the committee. Is there any chance you want to say anything to us about this bill that's near and dear to your heart?
Thank you. Yeah.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Mackenzie Prokosh, and I'm an account relations manager for Choice Auto Rental, and we are an insurance replacement car rental company that operates solely in Minnesota. So I'm here today regarding a steering issue, and it's a type of steering that is similar to what you've seen before in auto body repair and glass replacement, and those, of course, encompass part of the automotive industry. This similar steering regarding rental cars basically results in national rental companies having near exclusive access to Minnesota consumers, and that is done by way of contracts with insurance companies. Consumers who've had the unfortunate experience of a automobile accident or some sort of claim, they are steered basically automatically to the insurance company's preferred rental provider without being notified that they have a choice of the rental vendor that they would like to use. So oftentimes, these consumers are also discouraged from doing business with other rental companies that are not part of the insurance company's preferred provider. Not all insurance companies have these practices in place, and there's a few regional companies right here in our Minnesota metro that put the insured's interests right in the forefront of an insurance claim and offer them the choice that best fits their needs, regardless of whether that's price or service, leaving it up to the consumer. A vast majority, unfortunately, of the insurance companies do not. Rental reimbursement or coverage is not mandatory on a policy. Consumers choose to add it to their policy, and they should be able to choose who they utilize it through. So House File 859 provides a solution to our industry's current situation by providing and notifying the consumer of their choice of rental vendor and basically alleviating their concern that only one rental vendor is able to provide that service for them. It also levels the playing field for car rental companies and allows all rental companies the opportunity to do business in this market. Competition in a marketplace benefits the consumer, and for this reason, among others, we've gained the support of two prominent trade associations in our industry, that being AASP, the Association of Automotive Service Providers and the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association, MADA, along with other rental companies and collision centers in Minnesota. So as Representative Atkins said, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have and ask for your support in the solution that House File 859 offers.
Members, any questions on the bill? Is there anyone else in the audience that would... Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Anybody that wants to, please come on down. Seeing no one. With that, Representative Atkins, if you want the final word, go ahead. Otherwise, please renew your motion and we'll vote on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your co-authorship as well as members of both sides in support of this good business bill. With that, I'd renew my motion that House File 859 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Congratulations, Ms. Prokosh, and thanks for visiting Commerce.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, member.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Representative Atkins, sorry. For those that are following the agenda, we're going to skip around just a little bit while we wait for Representative Sanders to get done upstairs or across the hall or wherever he is. And we're going to go to 1394. So Representative Davids will take over for a moment.
Representative Hoppe moves House File 1394 be recommended passed and sent to the General Register.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Hoppe, you have several amendments. Would you like to present the bill first, or would you like to work on the amendments first?
Actually, Mr. Chair, there's one slight amendment or addendum to that or change to what you said. Eventually, we're going to send this to the General Register. Representative Atkins has an amendment that I like. I just don't know if it's... We're going to hear the bill, and we're going to lay it on the table today, and we'll act on the bill tomorrow during committee. Should be relatively quick. I just have to find out. I don't want to put this amendment on having to do with exchanges and screw up any kind of global negotiations or anything else that's being worked on. So
okay.
With that, we'll hear it. We can discuss it today, and we won't actually act on the bill until tomorrow.
Okay. Please present your bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we are going to follow with Mr. Pender here, and we're going to move, first of all, the DE-1 amendment.
Representative Hoppe moves the DE-1 amendment. Mr. Pender, could you please describe the DE-1 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, the DE-1 amendment makes the bill identical to the version that's now on the Senate floor.
And
that's going to be the base document, kind of, for whatever follows.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Pender and Mr. Chair and members, we have Mr. Reich here from the department. We're also, and Mr. Pender, I hope I'm getting this correct, we also want to delete Section 25. And can we do that with an oral amendment?
Mr. Pender?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that should be deleted, and it could be done with an oral amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that as an oral amendment to the DE-1.
Chair Hoppe moves to delete Section
25.
25. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now the amendment as amended. Mr. Chairman?
I think we should probably move the, and Mr. Pender, correct me if we're missing a step here, but move the A1 and then the A2 amendments to the DE1 amendment. And that will then get us in the shape that we want it to be in, and then we can talk about the Atkins amendment.
Okay, so Chair Hoppe moves the A1 amendment to the DE1 amendment. Chair Hoppe.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And to the A1 amendment, if members need it, we can have, well, I guess we're going to have somebody come down and speak to that. Come on down if you want to speak.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Reich.
Mr. Chair, this is an amendment that deals with non-admitted surplus lines insurance, and it conforms to federal law that's been passed that that we need to pass to conform by June, I think, of this year in order to be in compliance. And we have Mr. Schroeder from the Surplus Lines Association here who can explain the amendment and the need for it.
Okay. Mr. Schroeder, if you could please join us, sir. Is there anyone in the audience who would wish to testify against the A1 amendment to the DE1 amendment? Is there anyone else who would like to testify for it? Okay, Mr. Schroeder, to the A1 amendment.
My name is Nick Schrader. I work with the Surplus Lines Association of Minnesota. The intent of this amendment is to conform to the Non-Admitted and Reinsurance Reform Act of 2010. This act was signed into law in July of 2010 as part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act and will become effective July 21st of this year. There are six key provisions to this Non-Admitted and Reinsurance Reform Act. The first being placement of non-admitted insurance is subject to the statute and regulation of the insured's home state only. The second, surplus lines brokers are only required to be licensed in the insured's home state. This applies to both single and multi-state risks. The third, states may not collect fees related to the licensing of surplus lines brokers unless the state has laws or regulations that provide for participation in the NAIC's National Insurance Producer Database for licensure of surplus lines brokers by July of 2012. The fourth, states may only impose eligibility requirements for non-admitted insurers domiciled in a U.S. jurisdiction as follows. The insurer must be authorized to write the type of insurance in its domiciliary state and either have minimum capital and surplus of $15 million or the requirements of the state, whichever is greater, or minimum capital and surplus of no less than $4.5 million upon affirmative finding of acceptability by the commissioner. States may not prohibit surplus lines brokers from placing non-admitted insurance with a non-admitted insurer domiciled outside of the United States that is listed on the quarterly listing of alien insurers as maintained by the NAIC. And finally, surplus lines brokers are not required to satisfy any state due diligence search provisions when placing non-admitted insurance for an exempt commercial purchaser as defined in the NRRA. Our association has worked with the Department of Commerce and Revenue in drafting this language. And this amendment, all six key provisions have been addressed as introduced. And additionally, the amendment would update Minnesota Surplus Lines Insurance Act terms and definitions to be consistent with the terms and definitions of the NRRA. To date, 43 of 51 jurisdictions have introduced NRRA conforming legislation, and 15 states have already passed bills to conform to the NRRA. With that, Mr. Chair and members, I ask for your support of this amendment.
Any questions for Mr. Schrader from members? Mr. Reich, the department supports the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, yes.
Okay, I know you worked on the language, but I want to make sure you're on the record of supporting it. Okay, no other question? Anyone else would like to testify on the A1 amendment for or against? Seeing none, we'll take a vote then. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Okay, item next, Mr. Chair, which is the next amendment to the A2, to the DE1?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we are.
Chair Hoppe moves the A2 amendment to the DE1 amendment. Chair Hoppe?
Okay, Mr. Chair, this amendment, has been approved by the department, and Mr. Reich can speak to that if you need him to, brings Minnesota in line with 48 other states that require life insurers to send a cancellation notice only to the owner of the policy.
About that's time.
That we were hoping you'd say that, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yeah. Members, any questions on the A2? What the A2 does is right now you have to send notifications and so forth to the owner and the insured, and if the insured is not the owner, there can be no information given to the insured without the permission of the owner, so that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. This makes a lot of sense to do with it. Is there any continuing education in this, Mr. Reich?
Mr. Chair, no.
Fine amendment. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye to the A2 amendment.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have the A3 amendment. Mr. Chairman?
Well, Mr. Chair, this is an amendment, and Mr. Wright can correct me, but I believe this is an amendment brought by the health plans that everybody seems to be okay with. We are striving for that elusive peace in the valley, and there are people here that could speak to the amendment if members have questions on it.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify with concerns on the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Well, wait.
I don't have concerns.
Chair Atkins. Former Chair Atkins.
But I think for clarity, this one is actually
Mr. Chair, that we must have our numbers here confused. The A3 is the Representative Atkins amendment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Atkins to the A3 amendment. Would you like to move it?
I would be happy to move it, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps is what we may want to do. I think there might be some folks here that actually want to testify on the bill. Is that right, Mr. Chairman? Another Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, and Representative Atkins,
Chairman.
Mr. Chair, my apologies for the confusion. I think what we should do, Representative Atkins, is if it's okay with you and okay with you, Mr. Chair and members, is adopt the DE1 amendment and let people come down and testify on the bill. I think there are some people here that do want to speak, and then talk about the A3 amendment, Representative Atkins' amendment, and then the plan is to lay the bill on the table and vote on it tomorrow.
Okay. Representative Atkins withdraws the A3 amendment temporarily.
Temporarily.
We have now, members, before us the DE1 amendment. Is there anyone, first of all, that would like to testify? Do you want pro or con here first?
Mr. Chair, I do have a slight oral amendment to the DE1 amendment.
Okay, please state your amendment.
It is on page 4, line 4.2, after the word certificates, add the words offered by the issuer. So page 4, line 4.2, add in the words offered by the issuer. And then further, this is the second part of the oral amendment, on page 4, line 4.9, after the word coverage, strike the period and add in if offered by the issuer, period. So the second amendment on line 4.9, after the word coverage, strike the period, add in the words if offered by the issuer, period.
Okay, could you please tell us what that does?
I have Ms. Rowan, who is Catherine Commit, is here to speak to that, and it is their language, and it fixes something that was grievously wrong with our legal system.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Catherine Kmit from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. This is just a clarification that Medicare Select policies that are offered by health plans, the health plans have to provide information to the insured that these, in fact, are the policies that the health plan offers in case they might want to switch from one Medicare Sup policy to another. we just had some concern about the way the language was drafted, was that it would require the health plans to also provide information about every kind of policy that was offered, including all of our competitors in the marketplace. And there actually is a document that that everyone is required to send out, a Medicare document, or a document developed by CMS to from Medicare that says, here are all your options, so that the insured has is well aware of everything that's offered. However, just on this point, we wanted to be sure that it was clear that we don't have to advertise for our competitors, and so that's why we were making this slight clarification. Thank you.
Are members clear of the what the oral amendment is, the DE1 amendment on line 4.2, certificates, and then insert offered by the issuer. On line 4.9, delete the period and insert if offered by the issuer, period. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the DE1 amendment as amended. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I know that this is a relatively technical bill and a lot of housekeeping things, and at this point, as amended, this is non-controversial, but we do have two people here from the Department of Commerce. Maybe we should take the time to walk through the bill and make sure members are comfortable with the sections of it.
Mr. Chairman, would you like the DE1 amendment acted on first?
Well, yeah, why don't we go ahead and vote on the DE1 amendment, and then if members want to, and it's certainly up to the committee, but if members want to, we can have people come down and walk through the bill.
Sure.
They can go briefly, but that way people know what they're, what's in it, and you know, make sure we all know what we're voting on.
Chair Hoppe moves the DE1 amendment as amended. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 1394 as amended. If you could please state your name and who you represent, please, sir, for the record and provide your testimony.
Yes, my name is, Mr. Chair, my name is Peter Bratch, and I represent the Department of Commerce.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I'm here to talk about the licensing-related provisions in the bill, and I'll start with Section 2. Section 2, Section 3, and Section 4 all define terms used in Chapter 45 that are not currently defined, so we're giving some clarity there. Section 5 recognizes that approved courses that lead to professional designations for insurance producers are of sufficient quality that they should qualify for continuing education as well.
Oh, boy. I didn't hear anything, Mr. Chair. Did you?
Section 6 talks about those same courses and allows them not to be considered company-sponsored. There is a limit of half of your continuing education hours coming from company-sponsored courses, and this exempts those from that. Section 7 talks about what's needed in self-study courses to make sure they're of adequate quality. Section 8 says that courses offered by a bona fide trade association should not be considered company-sponsored. Section 9 talks about those same courses need to be open to everyone unless there is an exception. Jumping ahead to Section 15. This section and the next one recognize that licensed adjusters who have completed the federal government's rigorous education and testing process to be qualified to adjust multi-peril crop insurance claims should be exempted from the Minnesota crop adjuster examination. Moving ahead to Section 20. Section 20 corrects an oversight that was made last year when Section 82, Chapter 82 rather, the Real Estate Brokers and Salespersons Law was restructured. The requirement for someone to act as a real estate closing agent was inadvertently deleted, and we're simply adding that back in. Section 21 talks about temporary practice real property appraisers and makes the technical change of converting. The current law says that if you have, you can have a 6-month temporary practice license and renew it once. This simply makes everything easier for the appraisers and for the department administering the law, and says rather than 6-month license with one renewal, we're just making it a 12-month license. Section 22 and 23 correct something that happened last session as well when Chapter 82B was amended. An education provision ended up in the experience section, so these sections simply reverse it. The provision is put into the correct place and removed from the incorrect place. And finally, Section 24 corrects an inconsistency in the appraisal management company statute by emphasizing that the license is, in fact, a 1-year license and not 2 years, as it did say in one place.
Sir, how does that match up with the two-year licenses that are currently issued?
Mr. Chair, the two-year licenses are for the individual appraisers. Chapter 82C was a new law last year that licensed appraisal management companies.
Okay. Questions for the gentleman from the department? I have one on the bill itself. Page 2, Section 5. I see that we're talking about verifiable study course in Subdivision 3. That's fine. Subdivision 2 breaks. I think that's probably makes some sense. Subdivision 1, what would happen if a lot of folks will leave these things till the last minute, and they may need 10 hours in a day to comply with the department requirements? This is saying that the maximum hours they can have in one day is 8? Or am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Chair, which section was that?
Section 5, Subdivision 1, page 2 of the original bill.
Mr. Chair, I believe that
was amended out. Okay, thank you. Questions for members to the gentleman from the department, Mr. Reich, or the chair, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two questions. Page 11, Section 23 of the bill. I'm curious about the appraisal statute. Particularly the language that's being struck here. And it has to do, if I'm not mistaken, with individuals who may have taken college courses, and it deals with not being able to get retroactive credit for licensure. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sir?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, the language that's being stricken in Section 23 is being added to the previous section of the statute in the previous section of this bill, Section 22, and this was a law that was passed last year to recognize the quality of the education offered at our colleges and universities in Minnesota that have real estate degree programs.
Representative O'Driscoll?
That's where I was going, because I know that we have at least two, maybe even more, universities or colleges in the state of Minnesota that do offer four-year accredited bachelor's degree programs, of which I am a graduate of one of those institutions, so I have keyed in on that as an item. The other item that I'm looking at is Section 20, and that's found on page 10, 10.11. A person shall not act as a real estate closer unless licensed as provided in this section. I thought we already had in statute the ability for a real estate salesperson or broker or person licensed separately as a closer to act as a closer. What does this do to statute?
Mr. Brash?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, what happened again last year in Chapter 82 is that there was some significant restructuring, and what was done when the law was changed last year is all of the provisions about closing agents, which had been dispersed throughout Chapter 82, were consolidated in one section. Unfortunately, what occurred then was closing agents were taken out of the general provision in 82 that says you need to have a license in order to be a broker, a salesperson, and so on. And corresponding language was not added in, leading to what could be seen as the inability for somebody to be licensed as a closing agent. So this change was made to clarify exactly what you're talking about.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you.
Any other questions for any of the gentlemen at the table? Okay, so we now have House File 1394 as amended, and Representative someone else would like to testify on the bill? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Tina Armstrong. I'm the Director of Health Policy for the Department of Commerce.
Welcome.
And I'm
to the
just
committee.
Going over the health side of things.
Very good. Please
the things that he skipped here, we've got Section 1. And that is basically a definition section for the duties of commerce, and it pulls out Chapter 80D, which is actually not a commerce chapter, that is DHS, so the definitions there do not fall through to the DHS statutes. So that is the change in Section 1. Then we move on to Section 10, and that is dealing with subrogation. and ensuring that not only the statutes that are, that deal with subrogation for health plans, and that also apply to other types of plans, giving subrogation rights and making sure that the person is made whole first, is not just something that applies to health plans, but other types of accident and health insurance plans too. Section 11 is a section that we've added different types of Medicare supplement plans, and this is one of the things that that Catherine Commit just spoke to, but we've added additional besides our basic and extended basic Medicare supplement plans, and making sure that Medicare Select plans can also offer these new options, which are options that have 50% coinsurance, 75% coinsurance, some copay plans, making sure that the Medicare Select insurers can also offer those plans. Section 12, this is a technical change. This is in the MCHA statutes for Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, our high-risk pool. And what it does is some of the pre-existing waiver provisions that were already approved in part of subdivision 3A and 4E, this just pulls them in. They've already got the waiver in the one section. It deals with the cross-reference, so it's strictly a technical change. Section 13 is adding another waiver situation with MCHA for individuals that are covered by community-based health care coverage programs under 62Q80. Those plans tend to have a $200,000 limit, and so when people hit that limit, they would have the option to go to MCHA. And other than that, Section 14 is another MCHA change. And what this does is, back in 1993, when we put in the exception where people can't go to MCHA if they have employer coverage, we also have stuff in the small group law that cross references and make sure that people who were grandfathered in pre-1993. To not have to be counted when you count your small group participation. That's pretty much reached an obsolete point now, and just pulls that out for counting under the small employer. And Section 17 deals with private employers that have ceased to be self-insured. And that basically makes a change so that a private employer who ceases to be a private self-insurer may buy an insurance policy to discharge their continuing obligations and just make sure that the insurer is approved by the department. And then Section 18 is also dealing with the discharge of liability for a group that ceases, a workers' comp group that ceases to be self-insured.
Any questions for Ms. Armstrong? Thank you very much. Okay, we now have House File 1394 as amended. We have another amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of anyone else that wants to testify for or against, but there might be before we get to Representative Atkins' amendment.
Is there anyone in the audience who would wish to testify for the chairman's bill or having some concerns? Okay, with that, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the A3 amendment.
Representative Atkins moves the A3 amendment. To your amendment, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This would establish a working group to set up an health insurance exchange. And I know that is a politically loaded issue at this point. It was part of President Obama's health care package, and for some reason that has caused anything related to that, I understand, is going to be a political volleyball. But this piece of it simply establishes a marketplace for a competitive health care products that consumers can go shopping in and see apples to apples comparisons. Whether you like President Obama and the federal government, whether you hate President Obama and the federal government, that's not the point of this. I know lots of Republican folks, I know lots of Democrat folks that think that having a competitive health care exchange would be beneficial to the companies that sell those products and would be beneficial to consumers. This establishes a process by which to set that up. As a Representative Gottwald, when he was here, he and I went back and forth a little bit, not in a in any sort of adversarial fashion, but the bottom line is that if we don't do this ourselves, the federal law will do it to us. And what I've been hearing from folks that kind of know what they're talking about is that it's going to be some kind of potentially national health care system, which I think would be really bad relative to what I think would be probably pretty good for us, which is to do something in Minnesota crafted by Minnesotans that makes sense for Minnesotans would be something of our own creation. For folks on the other side of the aisle, if you know, the other thing I suppose is the governor might do it by executive order, and I don't think that that would be something, you know, my team over here might think it's swell, some of us might think it's terrible. My guess is that the majority of the folks in the majority in the legislature would probably think it's terrible. So all this does is start down a process. It gives the governor four appointees, it gives the speaker two, and the Senate majority leader two appointees, and then it gives the lead on the Commerce Committee one appointee. And those folks would have to come to an agreement. Sanders, are you the only one in the room that picked up on that?
Oh, no. But
if those folks were unable to come to an agreement, then it would go to the Commissioner of Commerce to figure something out. That's the proposal before you, and I'd appreciate your support.
Questions for Representative Atkins, Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chair, I have an oral amendment.
I'm sure you do. Representative Sanders.
Line 1.10, actually, no, I'm sorry, 1.11, we could strike DFL lead and insert vice chair.
Representative Sanders withdraws his amendment. The amendment. Discussion to the A3 amendment.
Mr. I do have an oral amendment.
Oh, boy.
And I,
Representative Atkins.
After the word Senate on line 1.10. And I guess I could just incorporate this because I'm the author of the amendment. But starting with the word and, finishing with the word lead on line 1.11, deleting that language.
Okay, so Representative Atkins, on 1.10, you'd put a period after Senate.
Correct.
And delete the rest of that line and delete line 1.11 to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That just, you know, then we don't have to worry about Representative Sanders' amendment coming up. But the gives equal representation to the governor and Democrats, gives equal representation then to Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker, and hopefully they can arrive at some way to address the issue.
Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Mr. Chair, I just incorporated.
Oh, I'm sorry. You've incorporated that, so members, that is incorporated. Where we put a period after the Senate, delete the rest of the line, and then delete line 1.11. Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, we need to add a comma on line 1.9 after the word before the word after the last comma in line 1.9.
Okay, can you please state that again? Line 1.9.
Line 1.9. After the second comma, insert and.
Oh, and, too. Representative Atkins, would you incorporate that?
I do. Thank you.
Okay. Discussion to the A3 amendment. Chair Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members and Representative Atkins. I am sympathetic to this amendment. I think this is something that has been discussed a lot, both inside and outside of the legislature this year. I am not a supporter of the federal health care legislation. I think, however, this is something, in my opinion, that we should do ourselves rather than have done to us. And I encourage anyone else that wants to think more deeply or speak about this to go ahead and do it. And one of the things we're going to do is lay this bill over before we act on this amendment and vote on this tomorrow, because I want to make sure where the members of the committee are in this. I also want to make sure we're not doing something that's going to screw up any potential negotiations between the administration and House or Senate leadership.
Okay, is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify for or against the Atkins amendment, the A3 amendment? If not, I'll go to questions from members. Representative Anderson? Yes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, you know, I know when we had this conversation the last time around, Representative Gottwald at that time was looking at this issue over. He was very concerned about it. He has language himself that he has proposed. Have you followed back, had any conversations with him recently within the last week here about this issue? And can you give us a little update on that at all?
Representative Atkins?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Anderson. I actually invited him to talk with me if he was in need of any help, and I haven't heard anything further from him. So it's my understanding, though, from the people that follow this more closely than I, that it doesn't seem to be making any progress, and the concern now is that it probably won't in that fashion. So we're looking for some other avenues to pursue. But it's a good question. I should have mentioned it in the outset.
Representative Anderson asked.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. I believe the last time that Representative Gottwald spoke to this issue, one of the issues that he brought up was the time that we have, and that it doesn't have to be done within this legislative session, within this year. And I share your concerns on this matter as much as Representative Hoppe outlined too. And so I'm just curious, you know, I think that would be helpful for us to have a conversation with Representative Gottwald. And then also wanted to know, if we put this amendment on, does this mean that this bill has to go to the Health and Human Services Reform Committee? And how does that play in with the committee deadlines that we have in place? Have you thought about that at all, Representative Atkins?
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think that's good concerns to have. I would make a point, and I agree, by the way, with the chairman's desire to lay the bill over for a day so that, you know, this is the kind of thing, it's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I'd suggest we invite Representative Gottwald to join us if he'd like to. Obviously, he's got some expertise relative to it that I think would be helpful. If he then wants to call the bill to some committee, or any other chair wants to call it to a committee, I'd think that that would be a wise thing to do. He did testify, you're correct, about the fact that it I think he said we don't need to do it this year. My concern in pushing it harder this year is if we think this is a political volleyball right now and a hard vote, and that we get, and by the way, I have conservative people that live in my district too that don't like federal health care. I have liberals that don't like the federal health care plan. So I hear from them as well, but if we think it's a hard one to take a vote on this year, imagine what it's going to be like next year. And my guess is that it won't make progress next year, and then we're going to be stuck with whatever the feds decide to do to us. And I don't think that that's going to be as appealing as something that we would draft on our own.
Representative Anderson, yes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. I guess I don't see it necessarily as a political football. This is definitely a fix that I would like to see happen. I'm not concerned about that piece, but I am concerned about jeopardizing the other language that we have in this legislation by causing this bill then to go to Health and Human Services Reform Committee past the second policy deadline. And I guess, you know, it would be helpful to know. I think that we would be basically killing the bill, essentially, if that's tacked on there. But I'll just leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. And that is one of the things I want to talk to Representative Gottwald, and I want to talk to people that know more about how bills move. And if we would, if this does go on, if we have to send it there, I'm sympathetic to this personally. I think it is something that we need to address and we should address. I just don't know that this is the right vehicle or the right time for it. So those are the things that I want to check between now and 24 hours from now.
Thank you, Mr. Hoppe. Mr. Pender, this amendment on line 1.6, we talk about health insurance exchange. Is this indemnity plans, or does this include everything from HMOs to ERISA plans to everything? where I'm going with this is if it's just indemnity health insurance, it shouldn't have to go to the Health Committee because the Commerce Department oversees that. Or does the proposed health insurance exchange include everything?
Mr. Chair, the health insurance exchange includes all insured coverage. So it would include indemnity, it would include HMOs, it would include Blue Cross Blue Shield, and so on.
Thank you, Mr. Pender. Any further discussion from members? Otherwise, we'll be laying House File 1394 over until tomorrow as amended. House File 1394 as amended is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Did we lose Sanders in that?
Yeah.
We wouldn't accept his amendments, we won't.
We're supposed to testify for Sanders here.
Sanders, no.
Mr. Chairman, I told Representative Sanders that we voted his bill down when he wasn't here, and I think he might have believed me. So.
Or some Atkins, I thought it was because he didn't get his oral amendment on. He got up and left.
He got mad and left.
Okay.
But I didn't want folks to think that he had blown off, as I obviously was joking. But
Representative Sanders is off to another committee for a vote. Just let the record reflect that.
That's good.
Well, Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Chair.
I would like to move House File 1424, Representative Sanders, and I have a delete all amendment to get it in the shape that I would like it or the author would like it.
Okay. Representative Hoppe moves House File 1420 to be recommended to pass and sent to the committee or to the General Register? Or does this have another stop?
General Register, I believe.
To the General Register. Representative Hoppe to get the Sanders bill in the order that Representative Sanders and Representative Hoppe would like moves the DE1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 1420 as the author would like. First of all, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify with concerns to House File 1420 as amended? Mr. Johnson, you know what that means.
Brevity.
Mr. Johnson.
Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, this is a follow-up legislation. We appreciate the Chief Author Representative Sanders to legislation passed last year regarding this whole issue of residential contractors in the aftermath of storms. And considerable work was done a year ago. We take the 2010 law, and this has been negotiated between insurance industry and the Builders Association and Department of Labor and Industry and the exterior contractors, kind of everybody impacted, does three things. It expands the 2010 law to pick up siding contractors, slightly modifies the language in terms of the activities that are the kind of the scope of the law in terms of contractor conduct, and then it gives authority to enforce the law to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. So those are the three changes in the 2011 provisions to House File 1420, and we support the bill and be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair and members, I haven't had anyone contact me with concerns about this bill.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify in favor of House File 1420 as amended? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Marcus Marsh with the Farm Mutuals. Just want to be on record as strongly supporting this legislation and being involved with others and working on it. And I think it's a good piece of legislation that will help our insureds and our Minnesota contractors. So urge you, committee, to support it. Thanks.
Any questions for Mr. Marsh from committee members? Seeing none, anyone else who wishes to testify for this piece of legislation? Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
I'm sorry, questions for members? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. On behalf of myself and Representative Sanders, I appreciate your patience and your support.
Okay, Representative Hoppe renews his motion that House File 1420 as amended be recommended, passed, and sent to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Chair Hoppe, any announcements?
No announcements. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will be sending out an email in the very near future about the pizza some basketball tournament thing, but tentatively this coming Friday, but I will send an email out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is it okay if we adjourn?
Please do.
Good government all the time. We are adjourned.